This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutan, and with me, Melissa Idris. It's time for Pressing Matters, a show that gets behind the headlines of the day with perspective from members of the press. We'll welcome back on the show P. Gunasekaram, independent consultant, writer and columnist. He's also former business editor, head of equity research, and who's worked with KiniBiz, The Star, The Edge, as well as local and foreign stockbrokers. Welcome back, Una.
Good to have you back. It's been a while.
Yep, it's good to be back.
Okay. We begin because the topic that you've written about is Robert Kwok, not so much his business strategies, not just his business history, but the recent controversy that's raged around his name. He, of course, if you don't already know, is a prominent businessman who made his big money in rice, sugar and flour milling back in the 1950s. Now, recently, the 94-year-old tycoon became the target of bashing in the media by UMNO politicians, following a controversial blog post by Raja Petra Kamarudin.
Yeah, this was on, I think, Malaysia Today. And in fact, there were three articles that were that Raja Petra had written, and it made some serious allegations. He claimed that Kwok had sought to overthrow the administration by splitting the Malays and supporting opposition parties. He also claimed that Kwok was funding the DAP to do this, and he also alleged that Kwok provided funding to Malaysian Insight, that's the online news portal, to take control of online media for this very purpose.
Mm-hmm. I mean, very quickly, Gunnar, should we have just ignored this? I mean, is these claims are so outrageous on the face of it and mistaken in many ways. I mean, funding a legitimate party, political party in this country is not a crime.
Yes.
For instance.
I think RPK, as he is commonly known, I think he's got his own brand of writing things. You know, there's some truth in it. There's a lot of conjecture. And then some wild allegations, and you do not know where the source of these things are, you know. So, how does RPK know that Kwok funded DAP or funded Malaysian Insight, you know? Those kind of questions.
But he did have some interesting numbers, right? Some 50 million to keep the Malaysian Insight afloat.
And such. I thought,
that's... But are they paying really big salaries over there? Because I want to move over.
But if you looked at his articles, I have to say, I mean, I agree with Gunnar on this. There were no named sources. If you looked at it, it was essentially kind of analysis or opinion. But there was no one he quoted or no sources that were named, which is typical of a news report. You say, I spoke to this person and this person had this to say. But all the allegations were made without any kind of verifiable sources.
You said it's a mix of maybe a wild speculation, some conjecture, and then some facts. Is it something that you still read? I mean, would you read Raja Petra regardless of this strange mix of facts and non-facts?
Personally, I stopped reading him some time ago. But the reason I went back and read this was all the brouhaha over Robert Kwok. And then I just wanted to see what is it that he had written, you know. So to me, what surprised me is that suddenly what RPK was saying was taken as fact. And based on that, there was a lot of Kwok bashing going on. And this seemed to be, if you look at the sequence of the events, RPK writes. And then 1 or 2 days later, the PM comes out and says that Robert Kwok should be grateful for the contracts that he got. So that seemed to like sort of open up the floodgates, so to speak, you know. So Robert Kwok is a target as far as electioneering is concerned. So
Between the detractors, the people who, you know, who use really crude and crass language to attack him, and those who support him, who perhaps paint a picture of the man as someone who can do no wrong. And, you know, is the truth somewhere in between? Or are you one of those people who take the position that not only is he a patriot, he's done national service for this country, you know, and that, you know, at heart, he's not a man who's driven by political interests and would never have done any of these things.
I think that he's a businessman who is always looking for opportunities is undeniable, you know. So most of the businessmen do that. You know, I read his book, which was actually a pretty good, interesting read because it gives you a picture of how things evolved over the years, how they were, and then how they evolved over the years and things like
from
that.
From his perspective.
From his perspective, yes. So he talks about, contracts, all right? But these are contracts which you bid for. So even according to his own accounts, he bid for these contracts against some of the British companies, for instance. So it was almost like an open tender, and you came up and you put up your proposal, and you give your proposal, and then the government selects you based on what you gave. So, and he claims that he did this, in a manner which was fair and which gave back some to the people. But like you say, it is from his own perspective.
What about your perspective, Guna? I mean, you've been in business journalism for many decades, and although Robert Kwok left the country to kind of
Robert Kwok started business, I wasn't even born yet.
Oh,
so that's how far back he goes.
But I know he has such a reputation within the business community, just based on your kind of reportage. What's the perception of the business community towards Robert
Kwok? I think the business community perceives him as to be a business leader, not only that, he also is known to be quite charitable. He has set up a foundation, Kwok Foundation, which gives a lot of funding to people who want to further their studies and other things. I think in the book itself, he has mentioned that he bailed out the former MCA president when he was charged in Singapore. This is Tan Kun Swan,
right?
That was a huge bailed amount, which was
20 million ringgit.
So coming back to this, right? So the accusations that he was now cozying up to the DAP and all that, you might want to dismiss that, right? I mean, as an accusation,
but he has denied it.
The DAP has come out to say they denied it too. But what about his cozying up to the main parties of both the alliance and then the subsequent Barisan National governments? I mean, and what does that suggest about, is there a level playing field? I mean, if he was funding UMNO and MCA in the early days, which he admits to, right, and he says he did it willingly, is he, will the government, those governments in those days, would they have viewed him with a neutral kind of perspective, or would they see them, this is a friend and we're going to reward him?
I think he, there's no denying, and he admits it freely in his book, that he was very close to quite a number of the leaders, in Malaysia. He was very close to them, and he was on talking terms with a lot of them. And he actually says he had personally known all the prime ministers of Malaysia. Plus, on top of that, a lot of the other ministers as well.
So does that make him in a privileged position to get contracts, to have monopolies, or to conduct business in a way that would be unfair to his competitors?
It could, but at the role of government is to cut all these things off and to assess things in a fair manner. His defense is that he did it in competition with others. It was not as if he was handed everything on a platter. Say, for instance, if you take sugar milling and if you read his book, it was too far back for me to actually know what exactly happened. So what you know is what you read from the book and what you read otherwise. Because by 1975, he had already moved out of Malaysia.
Right.
And there's not a lot that I know about his business origins.
But Sharad, I mean, it was not just the kind of sugar and flour business, but he also, I think, helped set up the MISC, the Malaysian International Shipping Corporation, in the early days, and now that's government owned. I feel, in a sense, that in terms of business, Robert Kwok has kind of repaid his whatever debts, you may call it, kind of repaid his obligations to the country by contributing to the advancement of the economy. And that's something that the politicians
For instance, the MISC, the setting up of the MISC was also in a sort to reduce the huge deficit in invisible trade, things like services and so on, freight. So the idea for MISC came from the government. So, and there was actually a bid invitation to form a shipping line. So he helped to set it up, but subsequently it was taken over by by government-related agencies.
You're listening to Gunasekaram, independent consultant and business analyst. We'll be back with more on Pressing Matters. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris, and our guest, P. Gunasekaram, independent consultant and business analyst. Of course, this is the Pressing Matters show, and we look at the story behind the headlines. The big story in the last couple of weeks was the attack on Robert Kwok. Some people hail him as a great patriot. Others called him names in recent times, suggesting that he was out to divide Malaysians, in particular the Malay community, in order to help particular parties arrest power in the upcoming general election. Now, let's come back to this. So we have an autobiography. It's Robert Kwok's perspective in the world. It's not an independent biography that has triangulates information. And, you know, there are criticisms you hear, I mean, of the book, the saying that, in fact, he leaves out difficult details. And, I mean, and why would he put in the difficult details?
I think that there are some points he has made about, say, cronyism in government, and he has attacked some of those things. He has attacked, some Malays while talking about Malay rights, enriched themselves through rent-seeking activities. This would not have been popular with UMNO politicians.
Yeah, I do have to say, one of the kind of questions that came to my mind when this controversy was happening was really the question of timing, right? I mean, this happened during the 2 weeks of Chinese New Year. This happened just after the Robert Kwok's book was launched, in which he criticized the NEP. So I'm just wondering whether timing had anything to do with it, or whether it was, you know, a misstep in coming up with, you know, a rebuttal to the NEP criticisms, whether having said it during such the Chinese New Year festive period may have exacerbated the problem.
I think if you look at the sequence, RPK reports, PM says Robert Kwok should be grateful to the government. Mm-hmm. And then Nazri comes in with his attack against Kwok, followed by similar attacks by UMNO people. So it certainly looks like it is about politics. Here's this guy who says that the system was becoming rotten. So you take him down by this attack, you know. So you demonize the guy, you know. And at the same time, then you appear to be a defender of Malay rights and Malay privileges and defending the NEP and things like that. So you go for the Malay votes that way, you know. But at the same time, the other thing is you're already alienating Chinese voters who are already quite a bit alienated against Barisan Nasionalism.
But we should also remember that was kind of a U-turn. So there were kind of comments made by the Prime Minister to in a way retract that kind of nastiness, or to cool the situation
down. But the damage has already been done. So the issues have already been raised, you know. So you have come out looking as a defender of Malay rights, you know. So that is the situation.
I wonder to what extent Robert Kwok is important. I know it's said over and over again that he's an icon of the business community. He's well respected within the Chinese community for his philanthropic work. But the question is, young Chinese voters, right? To the extent they identify themselves as Chinese, do you think they'll be affected by this? I mean, are they going to be saying, oh, you know, does Robert Kwok hold a special place in their heart, as it did perhaps for their parents or their grandparents?
I can't remember any of the younger commentators on online, say, for instance, writing about this issue. I think for most of them, they may not have heard of Robert Kwok at all, you know, in terms of what he was as a businessman in Malaysia. So, but the thing is, for me, like, if you go back, some of it is, all right, here is, it's also an example of how fake news is used, you know. So Robert Kwok came out in saying that he did not do all of these things. So in the meantime, people have taken, you know, UMNO, as people in UMNO have taken RPK's article as truth, you know. So based on that, they have gone ahead and hit out at Robert Kwok. And so here's a classic example of fake news. Yeah.
Right, and it really does twin with the general narrative, right, of ungrateful Malaysians yes. who've done well here and left. I mean, in the case of Robert Kwok, I mean, he moved his headquarters in 1975. I mean, that's a couple of decades ago.
Yeah.
And just after we returned to democracy, you know, and we had our first, I think, the first election after the riots was 1974. Right? So maybe in the Robert Kwok story, there is also this other, you know, the seed of this dismay in where Malaysia... Very early on, dismay in where Malaysia was headed.
So I think in his book, he had been openly critical of some aspects of the NEP, especially with respect to share distribution. So this has been a problem which has been well known. You know? So you issue 30% to Bumi Putra, for instance, you know, when you go for a public listing. And then those shares are sold, and then the Bumi Putra stake is diluted, and then you have to make another issue.
Right.
So his point is, I mean, why do I have to make another issue? I've already done it, you know, so you can't ask me to keep on doing it over and over again. So I'm sure, you know, the reduction in opportunities following the NAP may have been a factor in him moving to Hong Kong, but I think the guy had already, by that time, grown big enough, you know. So maybe he was looking for a bigger pond in which to operate. No, that too would have been a factor.
He did say that in the book, didn't he? He did say that he was looking for kind of a bigger market and Hong Kong would have been better. But I guess the question is, I mean, given you know, what he's done for UMNO and for MCA in the early days, whether there is, you know, in terms of the business community, whether there is a certain allegiance that is expected of businessmen who have been successful on the back of, you know, favorable opportunities from the ruling party.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about BN. BN apparently still thinks until this day that it's okay to just dish out contracts to their cronies, you know. So that is why, you know, the PM goes, you know, I mean, you have to be grateful because we gave you the contract.
But you know, remember that's the very famous riposte by Dr. Mahathir when he was prime minister and being attacked by, I think, Anwar Ibrahim or, you know, people acting on his at his behest, was that everybody was a crony. I mean, in some sense, you know, people can say, well, you know, Robert Kwok, you were a crony too. I mean, you, you know, and it's very clear that he had a special relationship with the ruling party at that time.
My point of view is this, you know, okay, you are the government, you have to give contracts. There's no question about it. You must give contracts, you know. You can't do everything yourself. You have to contract things out to do. So, but the point is, this is not yours to give. You know, I mean, you have to do it in a very fair and transparent manner, and pick the best person possible to do it. You know? So, if you want to have any kind of affirmative action as far as this is concerned, then you should state your parameters very clearly, and then award the contract. You know?
In fact, we had a statement by Tan Sri Lee Kim Yew. He says, and I'm going to quote him, a businessman is expected to be loyal to his country, not to ruling parties.
Yes.
Politicians and political parties come and go. That's Tan Sri Lee Kim Yew.
But in Malaysia's case, they don't come and go. It's been the same party all the time from independence. So perhaps it's because of that kind of a thing. The government has gotten used to handing contracts to its cronies.
You know, I mean, in response to this whole controversy, Guna, you've had, you know, you've had quite a number of people come out in defence of Robert Kwok. Recently, I think Azmin Ali has come out to say the Selangor Menteri Besar. Tan Sri Rafida Aziz also came out to defend him. Nazir Razak posted something on his social media feed as well. All in all, I mean, do you think that this will kind of die a natural death, that it will not become an issue that will be continued to talk about in the campaign period coming up?
I think it will be remembered in the campaign period. If anything, you know, I feel that probably UMNO thinks that you need to get the votes, the Malay votes in, you know, because the Chinese votes are already gone. So if anything, you know, this episode will further alienate Chinese voters from BN. Yeah.
And what about, and finally, you know, that other narrative, Guna, I mean, since you're an economic journalist, really, the question of domestic capital and, you know, policies that either have hurt or strengthened domestic capital as a kind of a part of us, as a pillar of our economy. Do you think in the case of Robert Kwok, we see the failure of policy with regard to domestic capital?
No, I think it's wrong to think that Robert Kwok has got no more businesses in Malaysia. He has still got a substantial presence in Malaysia, but his overseas business investments have exceeded those in Malaysia. That's not it's not as if he has withdrawn his businesses totally from Malaysia.
And is he exemplary in that? I mean, is he one of the few Malaysian domestic capitalists who's gone on to do really well on the global stage?
I think he has done better than most now. No, so there have been a lot of spectacular failures of people who have ventured overseas and have not succeeded.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's all we have this morning. You've been listening to P. Gunasekaram, independent consultant, writer and columnist, because he's associated with Kini Biz, The Star, The Edge, local and foreign stockbrokers have also had the benefit of his services. This has been Pressing Matters. Melissa Idris and myself, Sharad Kutin. Stay tuned. We're coming up to the top of the hour. Then we'll be back with Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.